we are bombarded with more information each day than our brains can process, especially in an election season. It's raining bad data, half-truths, and even outright lies. New York Times bestselling author Daniel Levitin shows how to recognize misleading announcements, statistics, graphs, and written reports, revealing the ways lying weasels can use them. He does so in his new book, A Field Guide to Lies. How do we extinguish misinformation, pseudo-facts, distortions, and outright lies from reliable information? Levitin groups his field guide into two categories, statistical information and faulty arguments, ultimately showing how science is the bedrock of critical thinking. Again, the name of the new book is A Field Guide to Lies, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Daniel Levitin to the roundtable this morning. Daniel, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
What brought you to this, to the creation of this field guide?
Well, I realized that scientists like myself, as well as lawyers and journalists like you, all have received training in how to think critically. I've been teaching this for 20 years to university students, but I think most of the population don't have this. Most of us kind of muddle through and try to figure out what's true and what's not true, and sometimes end up believing things that aren't so. And it's been said that the worst thing isn't what you don't know, but what you know for sure that isn't true. And I wanted to fix that. I thought everybody over the age of 12 should be given some critical thinking training, especially important in an election year.
When you think about the importance of this, how did we get away from it, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that much about the history of education. I don't know if critical thinking was ever taught. I had a conversation with administrators at Harvard and asked them, do you teach critical thinking? And they said, well, of course we do. And I said, well, where? Which class? You know, I was being a critical thinker there. And they said, well, it's not taught in any particular class, but the students just pick it up. Well, how do they pick it up? Well, they just do. And it doesn't really work that way. The steps to follow are quite straightforward, but something that you need to know what they are.
So in those steps that are straightforward, what is step one?
Well, I don't know that you, it's interesting. I don't know that you need to follow them in order, so I don't know that this is the first step. But what I think is helpful is to see if the claim is even plausible, if it makes even remote sense. So somebody said to me the other day, it's terrible that in developing countries they don't have internet, and I heard that there are 15 billion people on the planet that don't have internet. Well, so yeah, you hear something like that, you ask yourself, is that plausible? Well, what do I know about the population of the world? I don't keep up with it day to day, but last time I looked, it was 7 billion. Maybe it's crept up to 8, but I don't think there can be 15 billion people on the planet without internet because there aren't that many people on the planet. That's not plausible.
When you talk about that plausibility and what makes a good plausibility check? What makes it a good thing that can expose claims that are outlandish?
What makes a good plausibility check is, in some cases, working out the numbers like we just did. Or, here's another case. It was reported that the number of marijuana arrests in California has doubled every year for the last 30 years. Well, if you start even with only one marijuana arrest 30 years ago and you double that number for 30 years, you end up with a number that's greater than the population of California. Again, implausible. So I think some of this is numeric, and some of it isn't really numeric. It's more conceptual. If you read about conspiracy theories, there's a group of people who think that the Twin Towers were not felled by an airplane crashing into them, as was reported, but that there's a conspiracy to hide the fact that the government planted explosives in the buildings. And one of the pieces of evidence they cite, the conspiracy theorists, is that, jet fuel wouldn't cause a building to topple in that particular way. And I don't know about you. I don't know that much about how buildings topple. Do you? It sounds reasonable. Well, yeah, maybe buildings don't topple in that way from jet fuel. Maybe it would have to be strategically placed dynamite charges or something. But at that point, in order to determine the plausibility, you can ask some experts. And if you talk to an expert in demolitions or in jet fuel materials, they'll tell you, yeah, that's exactly how a building would fall if a jet crashed into it. So, the plausibility of the conspiracy theory is challenged.
You also talk about probabilities in the book.
Yeah, I think, as scientists, there's very little that we know with 100% certainty. But some things are more likely than others. And this gets to plausibility, too. What's plausible is the more likely of two competing scenarios. I think it's more plausible that a jet hit the Twin Towers than that they were exploded from within. I think it's more plausible that there aren't aliens in Roswell, New Mexico, and that some people are just thinking about it wrong. So we're looking at probabilities, and I think getting comfortable with probabilities is helpful for critical thinking. I'll give you an example. Suppose
yes.
Your doctor tells you that a new drug will reduce the possibility of you getting some disease by half. Well, if it's a rare disease, you want to ask your doctor, well, what was the probability I'd get it if I don't take the drug? If you're reducing the probability from 1 in 10 million to 1 in 5 million, that's not such a meaningful difference, and maybe it's not worth the side effects of the drug.
When you think about these critical thinking skills, as you say in the subtitle of the book, in this information age, which is interesting because we have so much information, but it also can lead to great misinformation, can it?
That's the problem, and it's especially an internet age problem where misinformation disguises itself as information, and there sure is a lot of pseudoscience out there on the web. I think that we've made a kind of Faustian bargain, all of us, which is that it used to take us hours to acquire information. I mean, you'd have to trot yourself down to a library and go through the card catalog and find a book. And now all that information is available nearly instantaneously. But the bargain that we've made is that along with that information comes a lot of misinformation and untruths or half-truths. And so I think we need to take some of that time we saved by not having to take a trip to the library, and we need to apply critical thinking ourselves because the internet doesn't really have a gatekeeper. Nobody's doing it for us.
So we have to become our own gatekeeper.
Exactly. And, we can rely on journalists like yourself, PolitiFact, fact-checking sites. We can rely on friends of ours who are more expert on particular topics. But I think critical thinking is really, you're getting me on a soapbox here, because in an election year in particular, I think that critical thinking is a foundation of a free society and of a democracy, that the public has to be well informed so that they can vote in informed fashion. No matter who you vote for, you should be voting for that candidate with an understanding of what they're actually going to do for you. And it can be hard to figure that out without thinking critically.
And this gets into what you've been saying all along about the media, but that depends on what we choose our media outlet to be and the information that we get. So if we decide to watch a certain network that has a point of view, is that not in some way critical thinking?
Well, so it gets a little bit tricky here. All humans have their biases, and some media outlets more than others try to put systems of checks and balances in place to minimize the infiltration of bias in the reporting. They try to be objective. They try to get different sides of the story and report them. If you look at the science reporting in the New York Times, for example, the science reporters often go out of their way to find a scientist who disagrees with the finding they're reporting to get a different perspective on it. and not, you know, a crazy kooky scientist, a well-respected scientist who holds a different view. We see this also sometimes in political reporting, but less and less. I've observed in the last few years that political reporting has become more emotional and less fact-driven, not all of it, but some of it. And so we have news outlets or news programs that take a particular view and don't give full treatment to the other side.
Is there room for emotion in critical thinking?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's no accident that the word emotion has motion built into it. Emotion is what motivates us to move, to do something. But I'm not anti-emotion, and I'm certainly not anti-media. But I think that rather than the kinds of inflammatory reporting that really get us agitated in a one-sided way, what we would be better off with is taking in information slowly and carefully from sources that, to the extent possible, are unbiased, forming an opinion, and then being emotional about that. But a key step here is that I think all of us have to be open-minded enough to accept new information as it comes in. This is a bedrock of science. It's a bedrock of critical thinking. When new information comes in, you might want to change your viewpoint.
Daniel Levitin is the author of the new book, A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. Daniel, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, A Field Guide to Lies, Critical Thinking in the Information Age. The book is published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.